Don't panic. For the next hour, let Steve and Paul talk you down from that ledge, right here on RFI. They're the hosts who won't cop out when there's panic all about.
Welcome to the Don't Panic Radio Show. My name is Steve Benson, and this time, sitting right over there is Paul Schultz.
Hey, everybody.
Don't forget, nothing you're about to hear is true. And especially nothing in the news is true.
This is true.
This is true.
When we were younger, wasn't that a saying, this is true? Wasn't that like a 90s phrase?
This is true. Yes, it was. Later on, we have an interview with the fascinating Melissa Hubbard, Indianapolis activist, friend of the Church of Cannabis, friend of Bill Levin, the high priest of the Church of Cannabis. And just a fascinating person. I think you'll enjoy it. You'll enjoy it. But that's coming up later. It was and it went longer than I expected, so it'll probably be broken into two parts.
As all good interviews are. Now, is she from Indianapolis? Like, is she located?
She's from Indiana.
Okay.
She's from Indiana. I'm about a third of the way through her book, which is called Spanking City Hall.
Awesome.
And the first part of the book is like about her humble beginnings, and I thought I was poor growing up. Shit, man, she was poor, like poor.
If you're poorer than Springfield Township, your ass is poor.
yeah, she was poor. So that's coming up later. In the meantime, I had a pretty big fucking weekend, man. We went to the fair. The state fair Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Went from the state fair to the sausage fest, where I checked IDs and sold tickets.
Did you like watch for like the leg, you know, people walking out? Did you, with the beer down by the leg? Did you check?
Right. See, that's good. That's what you call a callback.
That's right.
One of the reasons, I believe, Sausage Fest, I think there are two reasons that it has, it's only 11 years old, and I was there from almost the beginning, mm-hmm. and it's grown from very humble parking lot church festival mm-hmm. to one of Indianapolis's favorite church festivals. Hmm. And I think there are two reasons. One is the name.
You can't go wrong.
Oh, I mean, everybody's like, I wonder if they realize. In fact, this happened online where somebody's going, I wonder if the organizers realize what that actually means. And so, of course, I read this and I go, well, I actually, you know, I am involved with the organizers. I was one of the organizers myself, and I don't understand. What does it mean? I assume it means it's a festival where we serve bratwurst and hot dogs. The guy replies with, well, it's generally sometimes referred to in a slang way and somewhat derogatory where there's a party where there are only men. And I was like, damn, dude. I was like, obviously my dry humor, my humor wasn't obvious enough. But
I love running the people reason, like that. You know, when the people that don't, you just keep feeding them. When they're oblivious and you just keep feeding them, you know.
Yeah.
It's like you keep feeding them sausage. That's funny.
Here's a nice big sausage. The other reason is there is no having to hold a beer down by your leg. There's nobody standing at the gate. There's no cordoned off area. It's just, we serve beer. And you buy the beer, and you're responsible for where you take it. So literally, people are walking all over the sidewalks to those of us who live close by. We're carrying beer back and forth, and mm-hmm. it's just a big, like, freedom fest. Anyway, so I did that all week, and I was fucking tired, man. I got up this morning, didn't feel like working at all, but I went in because I'm a trooper.
That's right.
Did you have a good weekend?
I had a great weekend. I learned to draw horses.
You didn't already know that?
You have no idea how absolutely frustrating for me to draw horses, but I decided I was going to learn how. Oh, yeah.
Wild horses. So that's great. Great weekend. Let's go ahead and do a little news.
We need a jingle.
See where that takes us. ABC News reports that Jeb Bush said Anchor Baby's comment more related to Asians. All right. I'm not going to click on that one. I have not heard anything about an Anchor Baby comment, but I can't imagine why in his clarifying remarks he would think saying more related to Asians would make it any better. I don't know what he said, but it'd be like, No. When I said wetback, I was talking about Guatemalans.
That's right. Not so much here. Cubans. I honestly think, well, first of all, I just heard the term anchor baby today, and I immediately thought of, like, Popeye. But the thing about it is, I think maybe he probably picked on, like, the minority of minorities, because I'm sure, like, the Asians probably are out now, even though, you know, even though they built the railroad in this country, they're still probably outnumbered by all the other minorities in this country. But so he figured it'd be the least offensive, you know, because you can't upset black people anymore because they're actually voting.
Yes.
So you can't say that.
And, well, no, but not only are black people. Well, here's the thing about black people.
it's about to get laid down, folks.
I as a white male. I'm about to inform you what the thing is about black people.
That's right.
I don't even feel like saying anymore because that is the most racist thing I think I've ever heard. No, the thing about the voting bloc of African Americans is they're almost guaranteed for Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem is if you are an African American and you want to have a say, you better have your say during the primary because during the general election, nobody's going to do shit for you because you're guaranteed to vote Democrat.
Right.
Maybe it's not. Maybe it is with the Asians. Maybe he figures they can't really understand what he's saying because their language is so different.
It could be.
And there's no Telemundo for Asians, right?
I wouldn't know.
Why would anybody pick on Asians though? They come over here, if the racist thing to say about Hispanics is who would pick our lettuce? The thing you would say about Asians is like who would program our computers?
Or serve up a buffet.
Or clean our clothes.
That's right. That,
the Asians got range, come to think of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, you think about the stereotypical Asian, you could be talking about stereotype where they always run the cleaning business and, you know, they're washing our clothes or, you know, the buffet or whatever. Or you could be talking about the super smart Asians that do well in math and, you know, do all the computer stuff.
Right. You figure they've got math, they've got culinary skills, they've got cleaning skills, they've built a railroad, they got martial arts. Why would you want to fuck with them? They got everything covered. And clearly, if martial arts movies have taught us anything, you don't want to fuck with them because even if it's just one of them, they'll still beat up 10 people.
Exactly.
So you don't want to fuck with them. So there's that.
All they need is an endless supply of people, and they would take over the world.
I think they have that.
Oh, shit.
Just not here, clearly. Because, you know, they're a target for, you know. And what the fuck kind of name is Jeb?
Jeb.
Ooh, that's like Jar Jar Binks. Who the fuck is going to vote for Jeb Binks?
And he's supposed to be the smart one.
Oh.
Well, I can't figure out what planet saying, oh, no. I didn't mean Mexicans. I meant the Asians. I can't figure out what planet that's supposed to be better.
Well, I've reached the conclusion that if the movie W was even 10% accurate, that whole family's fucked up.
Oh, I've never seen that movie.
That's the one with,
what's his name, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think we've milked that oil well as much as we could.
We milked the oil well.
That's all right. I'm inventing euphemisms.
So here's the Associated Press is reporting that Obama is calling out fossil fuel companies for fighting solar. And I think I saw that movie. What was it? It was something about Chrysler and a guy invented an electric car and Chrysler stomped it down. I think basically Obama's doing a Mr. Smith goes to Washington. Mm-hmm. And the president of the most powerful country on earth is saying that Atlantis. people who deal in dinosaur sludge are keeping solar from becoming a thing. Could it be that solar is super expensive and just has the technology's not developed far enough yet? No, it couldn't be that, could it?
No, not at all. But now, in defense of solar, had we maybe gotten our shit together 30 years ago when, you know, petroleum really was king of the world and ran everything, had we been able to get out from under that 30 years ago, maybe it would be as cheap as, you know, anything else today.
I think anything that's not fossil fuel has a fundamental problem right now. And it is that fossil fuels, as dirty as they are and as hard as they are to get out of the ground, are mm-hmm. ridiculously inexpensive way to produce energy.
Yeah.
If you look at the price of gas right now and what you can propel a car, you could propel a ton of metal at 85 miles an hour, you know, mm-hmm. all day long for like $100. Try that with any other form of energy. I think that's part of the problem. And I've heard hardcore capitalists say one of the problems we have with energy is oil is too cheap. And they actually favor putting a stupidly high tax on oil mm-hmm. to artificially make it super expensive because it's, you know, as a libertarian, as a hardcore like capitalist, I agree. Long term, burning fossil fuels it'll be the death of us. It's dirty. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous that we're sucking all this shit out of the ground and burning it. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me?
Right.
But I don't think that the tax is the right way to go, but there's got to be something that causes, I think someday, I don't know if it's going to be solar. I don't know if it's going to be nuclear. I don't know if it'll be wind, but something will eventually replace fossil fuels. It's just going to be a while because it's too easy.
It's the adage that necessity is the mother of invention. Mm-hmm. I like Lewis Black had a joke where he was like, you know, God bless you people who are looking for alternative energy sources, but this world will always run on oil till every single drop of oil has been squeezed out of it. And then, and only then, will we then hook up apparatuses to teenagers' faces and suck the oil out of them. And then once that's gone, then and only then will we return to alternative energy sources. And sadly, it's true.
Fucking teenagers.
Right?
CNBC is reporting that Ashley Madison is offering $378,000 as a reward for anyone that can find the hacker that stole all those personal data of all the Ashley Madison clients. What's the first thing that comes to mind when you hear that headline? Ashley Madison offers $378,000 as a reward to find a hacker.
Well, as soon as I hear Ashley Madison, I automatically assume Dolly Madison, and then I want a snack. So I'm probably the wrong guy to ask that question to. Then, of course,
how do you feel about adultery? Yeah. No.
The cynic in me goes, I'm all for it. The cynic in me goes, air quotes, hacker, air quotes, leak. You know, yeah. I'm just saying. I don't believe anything anymore. I don't believe anything is leaked.
So the way
nothing
my
is hacked.
The way my brain works is God's own personal mystery.
This is
because
true.
Two things came to mind when I read that headline just now. One was, oh, Ashley Madison, that's been in the news lately. That'll be a good thing for us to talk about. Mm-hmm. But then the number $378,000 jumped out at me, and my brain would not let go of it. My brain would not let go of that number to allow me to figure out how we could talk about Ashley Madison and make it funny and interesting. Because how in the fuck did they come up with $378,000? Why isn't it $350,000 or $500,000 or $1 million? Why $378,000? Was that like they're sitting in the boardroom going, we should do a reward. Well, how much should we do? $4 million. No. That's too much. It's too much. Well, how much is not too much? Well, there's this, you remember we were doing we were upgrading the data center and upgrading the servers? Yeah. Well, that project came in $78,000 under budget. So we have that money sitting around. Oh, that's good. That's good. How much is in the, corporate boondoggle, budget this year? Well, we were going to go to Cayman Islands and then get our own personal cruise ship to go to Fiji from there. It was going to be $300,000, but in light of recent events, maybe we shouldn't be doing any corporate boondoggles. So, you know, maybe we should use that $300,000. So what are we up to? We got what, $378,000? Yeah, okay, well, let's just use that money. It's like, what the fuck? $378,000?
That's a very specific number. You know, somebody was holding up for $375,000. Somebody pushed it.
Somebody said $380,000 and somebody else said $375,000. Somebody goes, let's just split the difference.
Paddles are going up in the air, you know, as like an auction.
Yeah.
I had never actually even heard of Ashley Madison until the whole Duggar thing happened. I don't even know what it is.
You never heard, you never listened to Howard Stern?
No, if he's listening, sorry. No, I haven't.
Because they were a big-time advertiser on Howard Stern. And I'm surprised you hadn't heard of Ashley Madison. If you surf enough porn, their ads pop up all the time.
I'm not looking at ads when I'm watching porn.
Oh. Yeah. Well, that's why. See? All right. Homer Simpson said it best. Not looking at the ads is like stealing porn. Except he said not watching the commercials is like stealing TV. But oh, man. Hey, why don't we take a short break and then come back and I'll introduce our guest for this evening. It's probably going to take me about 10 minutes to do it. So this is probably a good time to to slide in a little break and refresh our drinks and come back.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
We'll be right back.
Who put golden chunks of apple in a pie that's packed to go?
Dolly did it.
Who put juicy red cherries in a neat-to-eat treat? Who put a creamy chocolate filling in this great little pie?
Is this a test?
Nah, everyone knows it's Dolly Madison who makes delicious pack-to-go pies. Cherry, apple, and chocolate, all with flaky golden crusts. Dolly Madison did it.
Everybody knows that.
Welcome back to the Don't Panic Radio Show. Paul and Steve chatting with you. We're inching ever closer to our special interview. You know, that interview we did last week turned out pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The Andy Martello. He turned out to be a little, it's just funny. He turned out to be humble. So I was like, wow, you're like famous. And he's like, I'm like the least famous person. And so it's
right.
Like, I don't know. If everybody you run into is going, I think I know who you are. I mean, I don't know. You might not be D-list, but you're at least E or F-list.
Right.
But that was kind of fun. And like I said in the description, sitting back, letting somebody else do the heavy lifting is kind of nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's always nice to meet, regardless of the level of their quote-unquote fame, it's always nice to meet a famous person or a celebrity who isn't an asshole.
Yes.
Because, I mean, I've run into my fair share, and then when you meet somebody who isn't, it's like such a breath of fresh air. It's like, oh, you're just a person.
That's kind of funny, because you've probably run into a lot more famous people than I have at conventions and stuff, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I've yet to meet a famous person who was an asshole, but maybe that's just a function of I haven't met very many famous people.
You'll meet like, you know, assholes and fucking Looney Tune crazy famous people. Like I met Margot Kidder, who was love her to death, was Lois Lane in the old Chris Reeve Superman movies.
Yeah,
she's a beautiful person, but she is batshit crazy.
Hmm.
So I would probably rather meet a crazy famous person than an asshole famous person.
Greg LeMond. Now, he's the guy that the first American to win the Tour de France, and he went on to win it 3 times and did not have it taken away from him for doping.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I think at this point he's the only American to have won the Tour de France. So I've actually met Greg LeMond a couple of times,
mm-hmm.
and I think he might have been drunk both times, because if he wasn't drunk, he's crazy. But I've seen enough interviews with him to go, I don't think he's crazy, so I think he was drunk.
But that's all that is also a thing. Hmm. I mean, I've noticed like on when I go to conventions, like if I meet celebrities on Sundays, they're usually hungover, and they're usually like really, really, really short with you. So at least that's been my experience.
That's funny. Well, with Greg LeMond, he's going it's one of those things that I don't know if it is a thing, but it was to the point where I wanted to stop him from telling me stuff. And I wanted to be like, oh, you know, it'd be like if you're at a party and he wasn't famous, you'd be like, all right, dude, two TMI, you're oversharing. Okay, yeah. I'm just going to go over here look, hot dog, those little tiny wieners. I like those. Because he's starting to go, well, you know, I used to smoke a lot. Like, I was smoking 3 packs a day. Well, I think it's because my mother, it's because of my relationship with my mother, and she was kind of addictive. Had an addictive personality, and I kind of have an addictive personality, and I'm just going like, I don't know where this is going, but I don't want any information that's going to land me on the cover of the National Enquirer.
That was a bit like Margot Kidder. She was just TMI. I mean, she had everything short of having me go into her purse and get her pills. She was just very, very intimate.
The opposite of what we're talking about is meeting somebody who in some mainstream circles people think might be not crazy but sort of edgy is the wrong word too. Well, let me just say Melissa Hubbard, who mm-hmm. if you're from Indianapolis and you've been here a while, or especially if you've lived here since the let's say around 2003-2004 through 2008 time frame, people uh-huh. know who she is. Mm-hmm. She gained some notoriety, probably some infamy.
That's when she's more than famous.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
Oh, it's from Three Amigos.
So. Oh, sorry.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't.
You've been out of touch.
Yeah.
How many times did we watch that on the big ass satellite?
I remember the singing bush.
Yes. We're infamous. That means we're more than famous.
She'll be coming around the mountain when she comes. Anyway, so the opposite of this is okay. Let me put it this way. You cut out all that other bullshit. But when you say the word dominatrix, right? When you hear that word, if you're not used to that word and you haven't met anyone who's a dominatrix, certain things come to mind, and that was used by a politician here in Indianapolis, because she was a professional dominatrix who did not have any sexual contact with her clients. Certainly not, I don't know, I guess it depends on what you call sexual contact, but no intercourse, no oral, no...
Well, that's not what it's about. I mean, he obviously didn't know what he was talking about.
Well, but he may have known what he was talking about, but... he knew that the general populace didn't know.
Right, exactly. He knew how to play.
So he basically made her look like a whore.
Right. I have a friend who is a professional dominatrix, and there's no actual sex involved in it. That's not what it's really about.
There might be in your if you read Melissa's book for pleasure. She would have, in fact, that's how she kind of got into the trade, mm-hmm. is like she found pleasure in being the dominant mm-hmm. person. And then she met she would meet guys who found pleasure in being the submissive. Mm-hmm. But when she decided to, well, it's not like she decided it, like the opportunity came up to do it professionally. She knew she would not have sex with these clients, and right. just it's fascinating, and the interview is fascinating, and I talk about it as we're chat. It's I call it an interview. It's a chat. You know,
yes,
me.
We should just call them that. From
chats.
Now on.
Yeah,
we had a chat. Now henceforth they're known as chats.
They're known as chats. Interview implies I know what the fuck I'm doing when it comes to interviewing.
Yes.
So if you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be?
Yeah, suddenly we're inside the actor's studio.
Inside the sex worker studio.
That's right.
Well, it's not even a sex worker. It's ridiculous. Go ahead.
It's funny. I mentioned to our friend that we were going to be interviewing a dominatrix, and he's like, I might know her. I'm like, well, we'll find out.
I might know her. That's funny. If I'd known that, I would have asked her because, you know, she would have remembered. So she was a dominatrix. She was fucked over by the mayor of Indianapolis. And then the opportunity, which in life is so rare that you're presented the opportunity to kind of get revenge on somebody. mm-hmm. But the opportunity presented itself in the 2007 property tax fiasco.
Mm-hmm.
And she managed to use that fiasco where everybody's property taxes went up like 3,000%.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that's a state function, like the law about property taxes, the localities actually pick how much the tax is going to be. Mm-hmm. But it was the state that kind of fucked up. She was able to pin it on him in such a way that caused him to go out of his mind. And she and she's telling me, oh, I was totally using the dom sub thing, and I knew what would push his buttons.
That's
and
right.
And I remember, I'm looking back on it going, holy shit, she's right, because the guy went out of his fucking mind and did the opposite of what he should have done. He had millions, and it was an election year. And he had mm-hmm. millions of dollars in his campaign. And to the point, he's a Democrat, and the Republicans weren't even going to put anybody up against him because he was such a sure thing. And then mm-hmm. all of this went down, and the Republican ended up winning. Even though when he started his campaign, he had like $5,000 compared to mm-hmm. Bart Peterson's millions. Mm-hmm. And it was just fascinating. So the whole part one is about, it's not about anything really. It's just, we were chatting and it kind of took the turn of the dom versus sub and what is it? What does that mean in society and how do people view it and all that stuff? Mm-hmm. And then in part two, it kind of veers more toward politics. We talk about local and national politics, and you will not believe who she supports in the national presidential conversation. And you're going to have to find out. You're going to have to wait until part two to find that out. Why don't we take a little break? And when we come back, we'll run that chat.
Change the channel, Marge.
Welcome to the Don't Panic Radio Show. My name is Steve Vincent, and Paul Schultz is not sitting right over there. But who is sitting right over there is Melissa Hubbard, a local cultural activist. I love that.
I do too.
Yeah, the book is called Spanking City Hall, and we were just reminiscing about how this came about. And I really like the casual one of the I'm glad I didn't mean to. It wasn't an ambush when I hit the button, but I like the casual conversational tone we were going with, and just to catch people up with what we were talking about. When we moved here in 2005, about September. And when we first got here, I was really happy because our property taxes were so much lower. Plus, we didn't have a large local tax. We didn't have, plus the county tax. I mean, Chicago's just everywhere you turn.
This was a breather compared to Chicago.
It really was.
Yeah.
And then 2007 rolls around and we get these, we hadn't even gotten our bill yet. And I had been watching the news and I was thinking, somebody messed up somewhere. Somehow, well, they got rid of the inventory tax without coming up with a plan to cover the rest of it.
Correct.
And I learned that localities had, they did what no company would ever do. They set the budget for the year, and then they said, this is what we're going to spend. And then they divide that by all the properties, and they come up with, so this is what the taxes will be. And we'll just collect as much money as we need. And since they lost the inventory tax, they decided, I guess, to make it up with. Am I close? I mean, you were here from the beginning.
That's exactly what it was. And then all of these little local municipalities, you know, county by county, had to assess the properties in their county. Now, for Marion County, where Indianapolis is the 12th largest city in America, that's a lot of property tax assessments to have to do all at once. And I guess their software was kind of rickety or whatever. It wasn't the best software. And the time constraints that the state gave the local municipalities to do the job, there was no way that they could physically do a responsible job with the task that they were given. I mean, they were basically given a no-win situation. Mm-hmm. So in order to get the bills done in time, it was just kind of a free-for-all. I mean, they'd have two houses sitting next to each other, you know, basically alike houses, and they could be appraised, you know, $100,000 apart. I mean, that's really significant. Yeah. And then there seemed to be no rhyme or reason why some people had one bill and some had another. So there was no equality or fairness about it. And not only that, of course, the bills were so high that many, many, many people could not pay them. And even people like me I'm single without children, I could pay the bill. But it was a big burden on my budget. That, you know, it was essentially, to me, it was the government coming with a gun to my head and saying, you owe $400 a month. That's more than a car payment.
Yeah.
For just to stay in my home. So, you know, and I knew that there were seniors in the neighborhood, especially. Like, I knew that there were elderly people that had, like, lived in their homes here for 30 years that weren't working anymore, that kind of had the rest of their lives figured out, and that they couldn't do these bills. So we had to do something. And then that's ultimately how you and I met, is in that era during property tax.
I just looked around, and coming from Chicago, I started getting interested in politics while I lived in Chicago, but never local politics. It was always national. But then I would have these discussions with my friends that were, you know, we should all be involved in local politics, because national politics is fun and interesting, but how much of an impact does it... You can have a huge impact locally. And then I would always say, well, I started out my... of course, what's the old saying? If you're not liberal in college, you don't have a heart. And if you're not conservative later in life, you don't have a brain. I don't still believe that.
Or a wallet.
I don't necessarily still believe that, but I went from liberal to more Republican. And if you're a Republican in Chicago, getting involved in local politics doesn't make any sense. You have no voice.
You have no chance.
No chance. I mean,
do they even have any aldermen that are Republican?
I think there's one in Cook County. And probably Cicero.
And they probably just ball gag him and duct tape him into his chair, and he's not allowed to do anything, right?
That's right. Ball gag. Then they do the thing with the... I just read this part. They do the thing with this saran wrap around
him. Oh, mummify him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he just sits there. Mummify him and ball gag him.
If they need him to vote, they'll cut out, you know, the mouth hole or something.
Yeah, that's funny.
But so we got here, and I never wanted to call myself libertarian, so I kept saying, I lean Republican, but I will vote Democrat. But anyway, we get here, and we just get mad. We see it. We're like, we came from Chicago in part to get away from being the middle class on which the entire city is balanced on the backs of the middle class in Chicago. We came here to get away from that. And we started talking about, what do we do? Maybe we move. Maybe we move to Carmel. And we both cringed because we didn't want to live in Carmel. And our kids were going to, we knew that we were going to send them to St. Thomas right across the street where my wife went to school, her mom went to school. And my wife was just crying. And I said, one of my beliefs about government in general is the government should never be doing anything that causes you to make major life decisions. Now, it does all the time, obviously, but I thought,
that's a good philosophy. No, they shouldn't. You should be able to just kind of live your life in peace. And that should be their job, is to have as minimal impact on people's lives for the worse as possible.
Yes.
Good philosophy.
You're born, and through no fault of your own, you're automatically...
a slave.
A slave to the government. You know, I try not to use the rhetoric, because I actually believe I can have an impact on people's thinking, even if that's just a fantasy. But I try not to use that terminology, but it really is. I mean, you're a slave, right?
When you work through April to pay your federal income tax every year, you're a slave.
Yeah.
That's your labor.
Yeah.
That is taken from you.
Yeah.
And it's not voluntary like it's supposed to be.
Right.
It's taken from you at a point of gun. Well, you don't see the gun unless you don't pay.
If you don't pay, you'll see the gun.
You'll see the gun eventually. Real fast.
The gun will arrive. So I started seeing these signs pop up in people's yards, you know, for sale, what was it? For sale by owner due to high taxation.
Yeah, for sale by owner due to unfair taxation. That's it. And that idea came to me to do all those signs because, at the very first rally at the governor's mansion, were you at that one?
No, we were in Michigan. I remember reading about it going, yes!
Yes!
Somebody's doing something!
We did something. Yeah, and so all these people went to Sullivan Hardware and bought the for sale by owner signs, that you'd put on your house or something. Mm-hmm. And everybody kind of had the same idea. And I was like, whoa, we need to get real matching signs. And so I, you know, found a company on the internet that would make them. And I was going to pay for them all. And then, but I needed a way to sell them or distribute them. Yeah. And so I went to Sullivan Hardware, and bless their hearts, that's our hardware store at 49th in Pennsylvania, right in the middle of our neighborhood that everybody goes to. And they're like, oh, we'll not only sell them for you, we will buy them, and we will sell them to the neighborhood at cost.
Now, that was brilliant.
That was brilliant. And they had those signs distributed in 2 days and had to reorder.
Yeah.
So within a matter of like 2 or 3 days max, we had those signs all up and down Meridian Street.
Oh, they were everywhere.
Which is the main historic artery through the city. You know, it was absolutely, it went off like a hitch. And then within a week, Governor Daniels was using those signs in our neighborhood in his, you know, campaign communication materials that he was distributing, saying that, you know, he's hearing us. And that something's going to be done about it. You know, of course, he didn't have a solution then because it all had to be vetted and sorted out.
Yeah.
But Governor Daniels, that made him respond very positively.
Yeah.
And he did a good job with us throughout that whole thing. He was very respectful to the people. Other politicians were not.
Did you ever meet with him, with Governor Daniels?
No, but some of our other activists did. I don't think people like him or maybe took me seriously because I had been a dominatrix. Maybe. Oh, yeah. I think that kind of had something to do with it.
People are used to letting the dog out during the podcast.
So. Oh, okay. Let the dog out. Yeah, so, you know, and I think that that had something to do with it, and I was very politically naive, but I had been in the kink underground, which is filthy.
Hmm.
The people are filthy.
Really? Kinky people are filthy? Never
will. Not all.
Not all.
A lot of them, though. They're kind of immoral. Now, not all are immoral. But in the internet undergrounds, it's very troll-like there. It's very political. When you're in the kink societies, they're very political and they're vicious, especially the dominatrices. And they're just mean.
I actually am surprised by that because in my experience, which is limited, but it always seems like when somebody's into an extreme... What I would consider extreme lifestyle. Maybe it's not extreme, maybe it's mainstream, but it's not something you talk about at the water cooler at work, put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Usually there's a sense of community, and isn't there like a sense of community? No. And like we have each other's back.
And gays had the same trouble too when they were still closeted and cloaked, you know, and they were first starting to come out of the closet. They were like, if you were mad at somebody or you had a little vendetta about somebody, you would just out them to your family or to their families or to their job or whatever and try to ruin their lives. I mean, there were all these vicious attacks that used to go on in the gay community. And it was kind of the same thing in the kink community, but I think it might have even been even more vicious. Mm. And because I didn't exactly play by their rules and I'm kind of clean cut and not tattooed up and I'm not pierced up and I look like, you know... Yeah. A business professional.
Well, it's fascinating. I'm about a third of the way through your book now, which is still in the how you came to be the dominatrix and how that went. And it's fascinating to me because the society's view of a dominatrix is not that you're moral and that you have principles and all that. I learned from you actually just from following you on Facebook and following you in the news and stuff. I was like, I heard she was a dominatrix, but she's very centered and very moral. And like in reading your book, you get that. It's like,
thanks. I'm glad that comes across.
And you go, well, I'm not, you know, this comes up, but I wasn't into that. And I really don't get into that part of it. And I'm going, well, that's.
Yeah. And I don't have a problem with people that do as long as whatever they're doing is consensual.
Sure.
That's really what matters.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't care how extreme you want to play.
Mm-hmm.
That's between you and whoever you do it with. And, you know, if one of you ends up dying because, you know, you're taking these games pretty far, well, that's on you.
Yeah.
But, you know, I also, because I'm libertarian, I don't have a problem with assisted suicide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're really old and in pain or, you know, the reasons for that. I don't have a problem if a person decides they want to spend their life as a heroin addict. It's your body. It's your life to do with and free will. And I don't believe in like getting involved in a person's free will in any way, shape, or form. Unless their free will causes harm to another person's life.
Sure.
Then we have a right to intervene and stop them.
Yeah.
But if it's just you're destroying, go for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And so, but for me, I never wanted to do real extreme play. I was just fascinated with the psychology part.
That's what I find fascinating. And when I heard your interview with Chris Spangle and
on We Are Libertarians.
Yes. When I heard that, I was, I learned more about that, the Dom sub stuff than I ever did before. I mean, other than, you know, watching movies and stuff, which is...
It's kind of fun. Yeah. And if you're sort of like you have one of these brains where you get bored if you have to be in the box too much, it's really fun to do that stuff. Sure. It's really, really fun. And that's kind of where my interest was. I just don't like being in the box.
So,
But I like looking like I am.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I like the list, my right? Brain is not in the box. Yeah. So
yeah, I've been accused of that time or two, but I've been, you know, one of the things I love about what you say is, it's similar to the best disinfectant is sunlight.
Yes,
the forces of evil whatever you want to call them, those who would do you harm or those who are in great fear in their own life or they're missing something, some self-esteem thing in their own life, and they might come and try to take it from you, they can't exist in the light of day.
No, they cannot.
They just can't. And, it's probably not a coincidence. Paul and I talk about monsters and superheroes and different things, but like vampires, that whole myth of the evil vampire can't exist in the daylight is probably not an accident, right? This is a truth throughout history, probably, that people at ancient times figured out that evil can't exist in daylight. And it just, if you have no, I think everyone's entitled to secrets, but if there are secrets that you feel guilty about, then maybe either don't do them or bring them to the light of day. Because sometimes I think, and I don't know how you feel about this, but sometimes guilt comes from a fear of being caught. And if you're afraid of being caught at something, then
why
maybe
is
you're
that?
Yeah. Are you not being honest in your life? Are you not being authentic with do you have a relationship that needs to be
right
repaired?
And I never hid being a dominatrix. Yes. I told my friends and they of course did not accept me for it, and I lost all my friends in the beginning, and that was really hard. I didn't want to broadcast it to law enforcement and the media, however, because I knew that was bad, but some dominatrices did it for me. Some jealous, mean dominatrices did it for me.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that's what thrust me into the media in the beginning in 03. And then once there, I was like, well, here I am. Now I'm really not going to hide,
sure.
And I'm going to use this as a platform. And I've built ever since then. And then 2 years later, Mayor Bart Peterson decided to use me as an example.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest mistake of his career.
No kidding.
It really was.
It was. And so our listeners can read your book, and it's fascinating. And maybe we'll talk about it again sometime. And I know that you've talked about it a ton, and I've told people about it in my life because it made me feel powerful. So your activism made me feel powerful because I said, well, yeah, because I said, I come from Chicago where King Richard Daley, was
King Rahm Emanuel.
Where King Rahm Emanuel, who was, the heir apparent, right?
Right.
So King Richard got to do what he wanted to do. And he had his mm-hmm. Senate, he had his Roman Senate that, would do his bidding, and if they didn't, they would get in trouble. I go from that to going, who is this Ballard guy? Everybody's saying nobody knows who he is, and there's no way he's going to win. He's got no money. Peterson's got millions. He's got a few thousand. And
no one knew his name.
Yeah. Nobody knew him, and our councilman, Monroe Gray, was he yours too? Over there on your side? Well, I was looking at him with all the corruption, and I met with him actually. I was like, wow, I can meet with my councilman. And he was clearly, somebody gave him talking points, and I saw him at a few
events.
Could
you even understand him?
No. He talked about the traffic light at 46th in Illinois and how Meridian Kessler people got away with paying taxes that were too low for a number of years. And maybe if old people couldn't afford to live there, maybe it was time for somebody else to come in and fix up the house. And I'm just going, who is this guy? Who's running against him? And that's how I met Kurt Weber.
Yes.
And started, I said, well, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do something. So I went to work for Kurt, putting signs out and doing what I could to help him.
But Kurt didn't have a chance because the district's gerrymandered.
Yeah, yeah.
So we got a little Chicago style.
So he got,
down here.
He did get like 42 or 43% of the vote, which Monroe Gray was getting elected with 75% of the vote every time. So I was really happy about that. And the Republicans made Monroe Gray a target. So I think that helped Kurt as well. So my next question then, at a local level, you were saying you got out in front of this issue so that you could get the activist, or you could, they weren't activists, they were normal
they
people.
They were just mad people.
Who don't want to be involved in government politics or anything.
But they had no
They want
choice.
To be left alone, right?
And I do, because of being a dominatrix. I mean, I had an instinct from basically at that point, I'd had 5 years of basically being a dominatrix and sessioning all the time and wielding power, if you want to call it that.
Well, you made Bart Peterson, you bitch, didn't you?
Yeah, well, he made me his at first.
So that's true.
But yeah, so I had this kind of innate instinct from having done that for so long that I'm like, pain. Pain makes people move. I'm like, okay, we've got a lot of people in extreme pain. So, you know, I can be their Florence Nightingale. I can be their Dom. Yeah. I can be all of these things for them. And if I can get them in the streets, then the libertarians can dictate the conversation.
Yeah.
But I didn't think of myself as a cultural activist back then. I didn't understand as much about culture in those days as I do now. And those days were about 10 years ago in 2007. So 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand culture in the way that I did now. I just knew that I could, you know, have some influence and I could bring some libertarian brains to this problem and we could steer the conversation, which is ultimately what happened. But we didn't do it officially as a libertarian party. We could never, you know, the libertarian party could never step into that. But the individual libertarians did, and we all decided that in order for it to be fair and as inclusive as possible to everyone, we had to be nonpartisan. Mm. And we could not ever judge anybody for their political affiliation. And we had to accept and love everybody exactly as they were standing when we found them and not judge based on political. Because we were all in this awful boat together and we all had to figure out how to get out of the mess together. So we were fortunate in that I lived in Meridian Kessler, which is, you know, like mansions and Tudors and bungalows and arts and crafts. It's a classic old neighborhood, and it's a very popular neighborhood, and they say about every third house is a lawyer. So, and there are, you know, some people of moderate and not so great means, but there's people that live here a very, you know, that are wealthy. Mm-hmm. We have like a nice mix. And when you get wealthy people into the streets with real pitchforks and no permits.
Yeah.
No permits.
That's key.
Yeah. You don't ask permission
of
the government in a situation like that. There's no reason to.
Yeah.
And I kind of weighed my options there because people said, well, you need to pull a permit. And I basically was like, no, if I do, they have control.
True.
So for me, it was all about who is establishing control up front. And I weighed the risk, like you play a chess game. Okay, if I make this move, what are their potential moves?
Yeah.
That's how you look at it, like a chess game. And I'm like, they have these options. And if they exercise the option to put any of us in jail, they are going to have even a bigger, shitstorm on their hands that they don't want. Yeah. So I rolled the dice with that. And granted, I didn't tell the people we didn't have a permit, but I did give the cops at the guard's shack at the governor's mansion a heads up that we would be descending on the 4th of July.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, just keep them on the sidewalk. And I said, no problem. But we couldn't keep them on the sidewalk because there were too many.
And people were too angry.
Yeah. I mean, we spilled into Meridian Street, which is the main corridor through the city, on the 4th of July morning when all the traffic was headed downtown for there, because there's a big party all day in downtown Indy for the 4th. So all this traffic was going downtown, which was awesome because we got tons of people saw us. Plus all the media was there and they spilled into the street so much that the cops actually had to close the street off and reroute traffic. Which was a big win for us.
Yeah.
And the police, law enforcement was always really great. But law enforcement did not like Mayor Peterson.
Ah.
And I knew that. So whenever I would see a cop, I would just wink at them and say, Bart Lies. Bart was the name of our mayor that
was
got ousted.
Was that the Bart Lies website? Was that a police officer that started that?
No.
Okay.
No, it was actually the Bart Lies campaign, the signs and bumper stickers and stuff. That was one guy. He did that. It started out with Bart Lied, And then I told him, I'm like, no, you need to change that to present tense because he lies all the time. He was like, yeah, you're right. So that got changed. And then he had signs and stuff printed. And then another guy came along and bought the BartLies.com, and he ran that. And he was a great egg. I met him at a city council meeting, and he got mucked up with us. And oh my gosh, he was great because I could bring him information, and then he could make memes and crazy things and put on the website.
And before memes were cool.
Before memes were cool, he was doing memes.
Oh man, Facebook. Can you imagine now with Facebook? It would just be nuts, right?
If we had Facebook, it would have been 10 times bigger.
It was all email and message boards and comments on newspaper articles.
Comments, yeah. newspaper articles, blogs. Comments on blogs. And the bloggers. Yeah. So none of the bloggers at that time really, I mean, some of them knew each other, but a lot of them had never met in person and that kind of thing. Okay. So I made sure I met all the bloggers in person and got to know them. And then I made sure that they all got to meet each other. Like, I did this networking thing. Yeah. That's what I do.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's like, great.
It seems really simple, and it is. That's kind of sometimes all you need to do is know where all the puzzle pieces are out there and fit them all together and then make sure the right hand knows what the left hand is doing and be sort of like this central command control center, you know, letting everybody know, hey, this is what we're doing next. And people would show up.
It only took
4 months, too.
And the punchline is, Bart loses.
That just about does it for today. If you enjoyed part one of my chat with Melissa, part two gets, we go from the personal and intimate to the national and intimate. She has her very unique take on national politics and politics in general. I think it's just, to me, meeting someone who has some notoriety and some infamy and finding out that they're very sort of conservative in a way. And given that she's libertarian, she's a Gary Johnson supporter. I think you'll all be very surprised at who she's supporting for national office at the presidential level.
Okay. I'm personally voting for Skeletor.
So for Melissa Hubbard
or Cthulhu.
On behalf of Melissa Hubbard and for Paul Schultz, my name is Steve Vinson. Regardless of what others may tell you, nothing you just heard was true. Do It Indie Radio Hour is next. So stick around.